bring you a special report. Kicks Podcast.
It's all ball. It's all ball. It's all ball.
Not life, but direct. We love this game.
It's all ball. It's all ball. It's all ball.
So, All Ball Podcast ist zurück mit einer neuen Episode. Wir sind immer noch in Treviso. Mir gegenüber sitzt der Phil.
Jawohl, jawohl.
What's up? Und wie gesagt, wir sind in Treviso noch, immer noch beim Adidas Eurocamp und erwarten jetzt gleich unseren ersten NBA-Spieler.
Ja, Mann, endlich ist es soweit. Wir haben jetzt ein Jahr gehustelt, haben Gas gegeben und jetzt haben wir einen legitimate NBA-Spieler hier bei uns im Podcast.
Ja, nicht nur, nicht irgendeinen, sondern auch einen Starter. Also
ja.
Los Angeles Clippers Center Ivica Zubac.
Ja, Mann. Und ich meine, spätestens seit dieser Saison ist er bei den Leuten auf dem Schirm. Wir wissen, was er geleistet hat. Er hat dieses fast 30-30-Game abgerissen. Er ist
total
jedes Jahr bei uns in der Fantasy League vertreten. Stat-technisch längst in der NBA angekommen. Ja, jetzt würde ich mal sagen, schauen wir mal, wie der so tickt, weil ist ein ganz sympathischer Dude meiner Meinung nach. Und ich glaube, so als erster NBA-Gast könnte der sich gut eignen.
Ja, also ich habe ja ein paar Fragen ausgedacht, die ihn vielleicht so ein bisschen herauskitzeln. Mal gucken, ob er Humor hat und wir sind gespannt. Wir melden uns wieder mit Ivica Zubac. We are very excited to welcome the starting center of the LA Clippers, Ivica Zubac.
Thank you.
Ivica, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us. We are extremely happy to have you. Me especially, because I'm a diehard Lakers fan. And but we'll come to that later.
I was too.
Yeah, we'll come to that later. First off, how are you doing and how is the offseason treating you?
I'm good. Off season's been well so far. I got some rest, feeling good. Just started 2 weeks ago, started going working out again, lifting weights, doing some individual workouts. You know, it's been good so far.
The first question we always ask our guests is, how did you get started with basketball? What was your basketball journey? How did one start?
It was kind of natural. I was a little taller than the other kids, but my cousin used to play in the NBA he got drafted when I was 6. So that was kind of like a little push to get me into basketball. I was, I've seen he can do it. The guy that lived next door, he can do it. I can do it too. And that's what kind of got me into basketball. And, you know, I just took off ever since then.
We saw you talking earlier to the young players at the camp. Was your own basketball experience starting out like that? Like showcasing your skills at a camp and having like veterans talk to you?
No, that's why I wanted to talk to the kids, is because I didn't have that experience and I wish I had. You know, it ended up working out well for me, but you know, just when you're young and you're trying to make it, you don't know what's next. You don't know what you can expect, and having someone that been through all that stuff, I think it can be helpful for you. And you know, firsthand experience, I think it can be helpful for the young guys. So I think I wish I had it, but
right,
I want to pay for it.
From your point of view, what's the most important skill a young big man should have?
It's hard to say one, but I would say rim protection.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you know, even though kind of bigs change their games, more shooting and spreading the floor, I think rim protection is the one thing that is going to stay in the NBA forever. And I think it's one of the, you know, most important aspects of the game.
Yeah.
And being big, knowing how to defend the rim, having that timing and feeling, I think that's, I would say, if you're trying to make it in the NBA, I think that's really important to have.
Yeah. I think that's also one of the things that has the most impact, because it really impacts the whole game. It's it's the game changer. And at the end of the day, this is the one thing that decides on winning or losing, especially when you look at the playoffs. You almost stand no chance if you have no rim protection. So
it's you don't have to block shots. Like, you just got to change the shots. Sometimes it's not even that. Sometimes just being big in a paint is, you know, might make a guard think about going to the rim. So they might be like, okay, he's in the paint, I'm not going. So they, you know, kick it out. So I think just clogging up the paint, protecting the rim, and being able to finish the defensive possession with a rebound, I think that's one of the biggest skills a big can have.
Yeah, it's so interesting, because like when I ask you to name one skill, it's immediately a defensive mindset.
Yeah.
And not an offensive thing. Yeah, you need a little hook shot, or you need up and under or something. It was
Right.
It was when I was younger, I was thinking offense, offense, offense. And when I, before NBA, no one, you know, when they do all those draft breakdowns of weaknesses and strength, defense was always a weakness for me. But when I got to the league, you know, it's, you got to find your role. You got to, you know, be really good at something. Yeah. And that was my role. I kind of focused on defense and it's been going well for me.
Yeah, speaking of coming into the league, I mentioned I'm a huge Lakers fan. And as a Lakers fan, you appeared on my radar when you were drafted as a 19-year-old and in the second round, 2016. And I was really pulling for you because, like, second round picks don't always make the roster.
Yeah.
And I hoped you as a Balkan player could be the second coming of Vlade Divac, who was also drafted by the Lakers. Yeah. So I was really pulling for you. And people forget that. I mean, Vlade Divac, he was one of the first European big men that showed the NBA that European big men have like a different skill set and they can really play.
Yeah.
And I mean, I love Nikola Jokic, but before Nikola, there was Vlade Divac, there was Sabonis. Sure. And let's not forget that. So,
yeah, those are the guys that first came in. They showed the way for the know Europeans. They showed that we belong at the highest stage. So those were biggest inspirations for us.
Yeah, so my first chance to see you play was in the Summer League 2016.
Really?
And I immediately said, this kid is playing the game the right way because you worked so hard and you had fun playing. You could really see.
It was fun Summer League.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, give this kid his contract. What do you remember about the Summer League experience?
It was a lot of fun for me. That was my first NBA experience. You know, I'd never been to the States before. I never seen an NBA game or anything. So being drafted and, like, I don't know, 2 weeks after that going and playing Summer League, it was crazy. And, you know, just a month before that, I played with, Megalex in Serbia. So it's totally different. But it was fun. A lot of learning, a lot of, adjusting to the game because the game was moving so fast for me, and guys were way more athletic over there. So it was a big change for me, a lot of learning experience. And, you know, I didn't really have time to, you know, take it all in that I'm here. It was just everything was happening so quick and a lot of learning.
By the way, I still remember your first interviews in the Summer League hallways. And as I said, you were so young and so excited. And I remember your English was quite good, but nothing compared to what it is now.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
No,
seven
years in LA and being around guys, being around Americans every single day for hours and hours. You learn a lot of new stuff because in schools over here we learn different kind of English, like, you know, British over there is a lot of different slangs and stuff and different accents and you learn a lot.
Was the language barrier an issue for you early in your NBA career?
Because a lot of coverages that had different names that, you know, they all knew them. All the young guys coming in from the States, from USA, they knew all those terminology and I didn't. And it took me a while to understand all that. And then when you understand it, when you get on a court, everything happens so quick. You got to be able to communicate something real quick when you see it. And that was a little issue for me in the beginning. But with time, with experience, you know, the game slows down for you. So it gets easier and easier.
Nice. Please tell us about the Lakers rookie experience. Was there a lot of rookie hazing going on? Like, yo, Rook, can you carry this bag?
Yeah,
think 12 cheeseburgers.
No. They asked me to carry their bags around to buy some snacks on the road for them when they wanted to, but it was not too crazy because after when I went to the Clippers, you know, I was with Lou Williams and Pat Beverly, and they were making rookies do a lot of stuff, and I was like, I had it easy. I was thinking I had it easy with the Lakers because it was a young team, so there was not a lot of veterans on that team, and I think I had it pretty easy. Me and Brandon Ingram.
Yeah.
But what was a prime example for the hard stuff that the Clippers rookies then had to do? I'm just curious.
The hard stuff was in a bubble. when we were in a bubble, the head guys, you know, we could order food from outside of the bubble, but it would come to one spot and the guys had to walk for like 20 minutes to go get food and bring them back. And then there was one situation, Terrence man brought the food. I think it was to Joakim Noah, and he brought the food upstairs. He finally, after like walking 20 yeah. minutes one direction, 20 other, and he's like, "This is cold." He was like, "What do you want me to do about it?" He was like, "Go heat it up, find a microwave." So this damn. Dude had to find a microwave, heat it up for him. And but like, they have a snack bag, which yeah. is that you bring on the road. And snack bag, in the beginning of the season, you got to ask every team what they want in that snack bag, mm-hmm. like with snacks, candy, whatever. And it, always on the road, they got to be full of those candies. And, you know, on the road, you got to, there's cards inside, iPhone chargers, stuff like that, stuff that you might need on the road. And like, middle of the night, someone calls you 3 a.m., 4 a.m., you gotta go and do it. And if you don't have it, you gotta go find a store and buy it. So it's you know, it's, it can be a lot. And you gotta do it. There's no choice. Yeah. So yeah.
Damn. That's crazy. Your Lakers career came to an end when you were traded in 2019 to the Clippers for Mike Muscala. An absolute travesty in my book. Like, I absolutely hate that trade, and I was so mad. How was it for you? I mean, you didn't have to move, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's
no. It was pretty easy. We were in Boston, and it was a game day. We went through a walkthrough in the morning, and I was supposed to start. So like that was the trade deadline day. And deadline was, I think, 2 o'clock or something like that. We went through a shoot around. I didn't know anything. We came back to the hotel. And normally in NBA, on a round at a trade deadline day, everyone's so stressed out. You know, you never know when you might get traded. Guys are always talking about stuff. But I didn't really knew anything was going to happen. And just before I took my nap, pregame nap, my phone rang. It said Rob Pelinka, and you know, I already knew it was a trade. I it was like 20 minutes before trade deadline.
Yeah.
And they called me. They were like, you know, "Thank you for everything. We're trading you." I say, "Where?" They said Clippers. And they said, you know, "You're gonna start there. You're gonna get a real like a lot of minutes." And that was it. And after that, the Clippers called me. It was first Doc Rivers, Lawrence Frank, Steve Ballmer, Jerry West. They were all excited. They mm-hmm. were all happy they were getting me. And, you know, I looked up a schedule, and they were coming to Boston the next day.
Okay.
So I actually stayed in Boston, and in 2 days, I played my first game with the Clippers. We went back home, stayed in the same house. It was pretty easy. And situation-wise, it was much better fit for me,
yep.
you know, where I got to start from a day one. Yep. And I was getting a lot more minutes. So right. It worked out well for me.
Yeah. yeah. But as a Laker, you no doubt experienced that little friction between the two LA teams. How was it to play for the crosstown rivals, like from one day to the other?
It was crazy coming to the Staples first time as a Clipper, playing a home game. And you see, you know, I was 2.5 years with the Lakers, and everything in the arena was purple, yellow, you know. And just seeing everything in Clippers colors, it was weird for me. And yeah. just, you know, walking down the hallway, passing the Laker locker room, going into the Clippers locker room, it was just weird at first. But with the time, you get used to it. But it's fun playing against the Lakers. Even when I was with the Lakers, it was always fun playing against the Clippers. But it's always fun.
The pandemic hit right after that, and all of a sudden there were no games,
yeah.
no practices, and the workouts were on a Zoom call.
Yes, yes.
So with everyone being at their home with the equipment and following yeah. the instructions of the trainer.
Yeah, so.
How did that work?
We had they sent us a bunch of equipment to everyone. I don't know how the other teams did, but what we did is our staff sent us a bunch of like, you know, weights, bands, bikes that we can, you know, and they would put us in groups with, you know, bigs, wings, guards. So I was in a group with Jermichael Green and Trez, and, you know, we would every day we would get on a call with our strength coach on a Zoom. They sent us a little stand for an iPad. So you put an iPad on, so they have a clear view of everything. And you know, you're on a Zoom, they're telling you what to do, and you're in your backyard lifting weights, doing conditioning on a bike. It was funny, but I think, you know, we had so much time, we worked out every day, the guys were in pretty good shape, yeah. And were ready for the bubble.
Yeah. Was it hard to stay sharp mentally during that time and fill that basketball void?
Yeah. You know, you're in the house your whole day. Like, you can't go anywhere. There's not much to do. And it's just like, you know, you miss the game. You can't even turn on the TV towards the games. There's nothing on TV. There's no sports or anything. So it was definitely a different experience than, it was not normal.
Yeah. And then everyone came back. The league resumed. But there were no people in the arena.
Yeah.
So it was like dead quiet, and you could hear like probably the opponent's coach, and you could hear them talking amongst each other, mm-hmm. like stuff that usually gets drowned out.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the noise.
You can hear everything. And it was so crazy. Like, we had cardboard cutouts of people in a stance. It was just so weird and quiet. And I hope it never goes back to that.
Yeah.
That was one of the weirdest things. When it returned, and then they were trying to figure out ways how to get fans involved, but they couldn't be in the gym, and you were like, I was,
you know, what was
up at night watching in the league pass. I was like, what?
In a bubble, they had like video screen around, and they would have fans on a Zoom being like, you could see their faces, but they were like huge sizes, and it was just so weird, man. And bubble was so weird.
Some teams, they had like, you could buy like your cardboard thing with your face and your whole thing, and then you could sit in first row. You put your cardboard in first row, but you have to pay for it. It's so crazy.
Crazy times.
Yeah. When things got going again, you really established yourself as an NBA starter, and today you are one of the best young centers in the league. Yet the Clippers don't run any plays for you. You think sometimes like, okay, I can do this right now, but I could do so much more if you could like run plays for me.
Yeah. This year, Ty actually ran some plays for me, and I knew how it works. I knew come in second round pick, fighting for my spot. I knew there was not, especially on a team with, you know, Kawhi and PG, there was not going to be a place for me. And I tried to affect the game in a different way, but I always knew and I what I can do, and I kept working on my game, and because I knew at some point, you know, they're gonna go to me, they're gonna run something for me. And this year they ran plays for me, and I think it worked really well. I think I proved them I can do that part. I can play that role too, and hopefully we can keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of what you can do, early last season you dropped a massive double double, like 31 points and 29 rebounds. Yeah. And I mean, correct me, Phil, if this is wrong, but usually, like, if it's like a double-double, we begin to notice when it's 15 rebounds at plus.
Yeah.
We don't notice the 12 rebounds at 13.
Yeah.
And 29 is like a massive earthquake.
I mean, you can see you're still proud of this game, obviously. Sure. So it's
special.
At the
moment, I was mad because I fouled out with 29 rebounds. I wanted to get 30.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask. Did you track the stat line? Did you know you had 29?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, I think the whole arena knew it because it was so hyped in there. Everyone was going crazy. Our players on the bench, coaches, everyone was. And I just wanted to get that 30th, and I think the foul was not a good call. The sixth foul.
It's still bitter.
Oh, for sure. And I went up, the dude missed. I would have grabbed the 30th rebound, and they called the foul, and I was so mad. And I was on the bench. Everyone was going crazy about it. I was still mad about it. It took me a day or two to realize, okay, this is not bad. 29 is
not bad at all. No.
31-29 is still good, and I can't believe, you know, I did that. I have a game ball that's, you know, engraved with the stats and a date and all that, and it's, you know, something growing up watching Kevin Love getting those like huge rebounding numbers and stuff like that. I always thought, how's that possible? But, you know, there's a day that everything goes your way. Every rebound falls your way. Sometimes rebounds, just they go opposite way. You can't grab five. But that day, everything was coming my way, and it was special.
Yeah, we just talked about your defensive mindset. Who's the hardest player to defend in the post?
Jokic.
Yeah.
He got so much stuff. He got so many moves. He got so many counters. When you defend him, you close one way, he got a counter for the other one. And, you know, even when you play perfect defense, he takes a tough shot, he still makes it. So he's really tough. And when you guard him, they push you through different stuff. He's going to grab a rebound, push the ball. They're going to set picks for him when he's handling the ball, which, you know, when you're guarding the other big guys, you're never in that position. So it's hard. We're not, as a big man, we're not used to being pick and roll as a, you know, ball defender.
Yeah.
So it's a totally different experience from guarding anyone else. And it's really, he's good. Everyone.
you are a hard worker and you're always trying to improve your game, but what are the areas you still want to improve?
I think I can get better with ball handling. That's something, you know, they're asking bigs to do more and more passing from the, you know, elbow and the post. I think I can be better than that with that. My free throws kind of went down last couple of years. I'm you know, still working on that to get a percentage up. My body just kind of being stronger and more athletic, mobile. So I can be better guarding those switches out on the perimeter. There's a long list. You know, you're never happy with your. You can always be better. So there's a lot of stuff that I'm trying to improve, and you know, I don't think I'll ever be happy with. You know, with where I'm at.
But that's the right attitude, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think you should never get satisfied because there's always room to improve and. This year, I felt that I'm close to, you know, getting to that level even more,
yeah.
To being that top, I don't know how many centers, but yeah. I felt like I can be there. And there's a lot of motivation to, you know, get there.
Yeah. Let's do some quick fire questions. You ready? We are in Italy, so pizza or pasta?
Pasta.
Pineapple on a pizza, yes or no?
No.
Dunk or block?
Block.
Kobe or LeBron?
Kobe.
Superman or Batman?
Batman.
Split or Zagreb?
Zagreb.
Beach or pool?
Beach.
Fruit or vegetables?
Fruit.
Text or call?
Text.
Comedy or horror?
Horror.
And if you had to choose, NBA championship for you or FIFA World Cup championship for Croatia?
I hate that question. It's hard. I feel like whatever I pick, it's wrong. You know, Croatia never won a world championship, so that would be amazing. But at the same time, winning an NBA championship, you know, in the best league in the world, it's incredible. So I don't know. I'm not going to pick one.
Right. Okay, last question. At the All Ball podcast, we always end with a top five, so... Please give us your all-time starting five of just ex-Yugoslavia players, the all-Yugo first team.
I'll say Luka at the one, Dražan at the two, Peđa Stojaković maybe at the three. Now it gets hard. I'll say Kukoc four, Jokic five.
Nice.
Right.
Would you bring yourself off the bench?
I mean, I would start myself. But let's be, you know, you got to be... When I look at it as a coach, I think I would start Jokic. But there's a lot of good big men from that area. So, and if I'm forgetting someone, sorry, but I think from what I can think of right now, that would be my starting five.
Yeah. Ivica, we have come to the end of this episode. All that's left for us is to tell you thank you so much. This was a lot of fun. And best of luck for the upcoming season. Keep working hard. And if you can, please come back to the Lakers.
And I have to say, fingers crossed for the 30-30 game. because I mean you've been so close, so that'd be something.
Hopefully it'll happen one day. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you.
Cooler Dude, muss ich sagen.
Ja, auf jeden Fall. Also man hat auch gemerkt, ihm taugt es so. Er hat sich wohlgefühlt, glaube ich. Ist relativ schnell aufgetaut. Und das ist, glaube ich, für mich halt immer so das Dankbarste in diesen Interviews. Ich meine, hier jetzt nicht deine Erfahrung, aber wenn man so diese Momente hat, wo man einfach die ganze Zeit darauf wartet, wann kommt er, wann ist es jetzt er, wann denkt er, wann legt er die Scheu ab, wann denkt er so, ja okay, mit denen kann man reden. Das ging bei ihm schnell und ich finde, das war echt eine richtig coole Nummer.
Ja, ich glaube, der Schlüssel ist dann bei solchen Spielern immer so ein bisschen in die Vergangenheit zurückzugehen, dass sie sich so ein bisschen dran erinnern können. Hast ja gemerkt, dass er da schon noch so recht emotional war, was so
auf jeden Fall,
was die ersten Jahre in der Liga angehen und besonders halt auch der Trade von den Lakers weg zu den Clippers. Das tut noch ein bisschen weh.
Ja, also ich meine, du hast ja gesagt, du bist diehard Lakers-Fan. Seine Antwort war, glaube ich, bezeichnend.
Ja, ja, genau. Ich weiß nicht, ob es mit drauf war jetzt, aber für den Fall, dass es nicht mit drauf war. Ich habe das Gespräch praktisch so begonnen, dass ich ihm gesagt habe, hey, ich bin großer Lakers-Fan und so. Ich kann mich noch an damals erinnern. Und er meinte so, ja, er war auch mal großer Lakers-Fan.
Ja.
Was dann schon sehr bezeichnend ist dafür, dass er den Trade vielleicht doch nicht so verkraftet hat. Ich meine, er ist jetzt in einer besseren Situation, hat er ja gesagt. Aber ja.
Ja, gut. Ich meine, cool daran tatsächlich, wenn man sich nochmal vor Augen hält, dass er innerhalb LA getradet wurde. Ja, hast du natürlich easy, kein Umzug, nix, bist schon akklimatisiert, kennst die Gegend so. Aber klar, also ich glaube, wenn du Lakers-Fan warst oder Fan von einer Franchise und dann zum, naja, Erzfeind ist jetzt schwierig, weil da gibt es ja auch noch die Celtics, aber wenn du so zum Stadtrivalen getradet wirst, glaube ich, ist es was an dir nagt, aber wie er gesagt hat, also hat sich ja super entwickelt. Also war für ihn die beste Situation, die er finden konnte.
Ja, was ich mega interessant fand, war die Sache mit dem Rookie-Hazing. Dass er da so ein bisschen ausgepackt hat, weil das ist ja so ein bisschen, weiß nicht, ob es Tabuthema ist, aber irgendwie wird da nicht meiner Meinung nach oft genug nachgefragt oder da weiß man viel zu wenig drüber.
Übel.
Weil ich glaube, es gibt so richtig lustige Geschichten, bestimmt auch Sachen, die vollkommen drüber sind, also wo es dann auch, ich sag mal, nicht mehr lustig ist, aber ich glaube, er hat ja selber gesagt, er hat es ja noch gut abbekommen.
Ja, ja. Ja gut, ich meine, wie er sagt, er war in einem relativ jungen Team, da war es vielleicht nicht so ausgeprägt, aber als die Namen Lou Williams und Pat Beverly gefallen sind, war mir gleich klar, hoppla, bei denen ist es bestimmt ätzend. Und ja, ich meine, es war jetzt nicht so irgendwie hardcore peinlich oder jemanden bloßstellen, aber halt die Art der Aufgaben und so, dann so, du bist wirklich ein paar Level unter mir und dann dieses Essen holen. Ähnlich wie damals Diddy bei Making the Band, als die für ihn Cheesecake von Juniors aus Brooklyn holen sollten. An das hat es mich erinnert, so, ja okay, shit, ich habe jetzt Hunger, geh mal laufen, ja jetzt ist kalt, ja dann schau mal, dass du hier irgendwo eine Mikrowelle findest, weil so esse ich das.
Das ist
nicht.
Hart.
Das ist so. Das war tough, war eine coole Story auf jeden Fall und ja, ich finde halt insgesamt, also der Gesamteindruck, den er jetzt vermittelt hat, er ist ein kompletter Vollprofi, wie du sagst, die Entwicklung von seinem Englisch und alles, also die Gesamtentwicklung, die er jetzt hier durchgemacht hat.
Ja,
richtig geil. Und ich finde es auch gut, dass er jetzt so hier angekommen ist, dass er auch hier in dem Fall von Adidas mit Teil von so einem Camp hier ist und auch seine Erfahrungen teilt, offen für Fragen ist von den Spielern. Ich meine, das war ja heute Morgen, bevor wir aufgenommen haben, als er hier vorgestellt wurde und so. Fragerunde, er hat sich angeboten, jeder kann auch allein auf ihn zukommen und so. Und das finde ich halt voll wichtig und auch schön mit anzusehen, dass jemand, der jetzt wie er, und das muss man sich ja vor Augen halten, der jetzt wie er, ohne der große Superstar-Scorer und was weiß ich zu sein, aber der halt eine ordentliche NBA-Karriere sich aufgebaut hat durch ehrliche Arbeit auf dem Basketballfeld, ist ja auch ein Vorbild. Ja. Also es muss ja nicht immer LeBron sein.
Absolut, absolut. Er sagt ja auch selber, er sieht sich da in der Verantwortung, ist weiterzugeben, mal die nächste Generation, obwohl er ja selber erzählt hat, dass er selber nicht bei so einem Camp war und das irgendwie mit Coaches gespickt war oder mit Veteran-Players, die dir dann Mut machen und dir gut zureden. Und deswegen finde ich das umso erstaunlicher, dass er sich da in der Verantwortung fühlt.
Ja, voll. Und ja, also ich glaube, ihm hat hier das getaugt, ihm hat seine Rolle getaugt.
ich fand's geil, dass wir jetzt endlich den NBA-Spieler hatten und ja, wie der Coach Bill Baino heute gesagt hat, Kids, schaut euch diesen Typen hier an. Der hat es in der NBA geschafft und wenn es gut läuft, unterschreibt er bald einen 150-Millionen-Vertrag. Was ich auch eine sehr amerikanische Ansage oder Aussage fand. Aber
ich glaube, das war ein bisschen peinlich. Also als er dann die Zahl gesagt hat, hat der Subat so ein bisschen auf seine Füße geguckt. Ja. Und aber was ich geil fand, dass die Kroatien-Frage ihn so ein bisschen aus dem Konzept gebracht hat.
Gut. Wie er sagt, da kann er nur falsch antworten. Eine Frage, wo es ja eigentlich kein richtig oder falsch gibt, wo es einfach nach seiner Einschätzung, seiner Meinung geht, aber vielleicht gibt es dann da doch ein falsch, weil vielleicht war es so, scheiße, wenn ich das sage, dann verscherze ich es mir und der er weiß ja nicht, wer hier alles zuhört in diesem Podcast. Ja, deswegen,
bestimmt ein paar Kroaten dabei.
Ja, aber seid nicht so hart mit ihm.
Ja, no hate, no hate. Der Junge ist echt gut, beziehungsweise ist einfach also ein Arbeiter. Das ist, wie du schon gerade gesagt hast, ehrliche Arbeit auf dem Basketballplatz, also keine Star-Allüren, der kam hier super real rein, hat jedem die Hand geschüttelt, also einfach ein richtig cooler Dude.
Ja, auf jeden Fall. Nee, hat mir getaugt, war die Reise wert.
Sauber. Okay, damit sind wir zum Ende der Episode angekommen und wir bedanken uns natürlich bei Ivica Zubac und bei unseren Adidas-Kontakten, die das alles möglich gemacht haben.
Ja, Mann.
Ja. Ist geile nicht Nummer. Selbstverständlich und es war eine geile Nummer und wir hatten einen ruhigen Raum. Ich hoffe, jetzt kann man den Raum auch noch so ein bisschen genießen, beziehungsweise, dass ihr keine Hintergrundgeräusche hört, weil hier sind schon wieder ein paar Spieler am Start, aber kein Problem. Wir beenden die Episode jetzt und danke an dich, Phil.
Diesmal besonders gern.
Ja, und wir melden uns wieder, hoffentlich mit einem weiteren Star. Wir wollen noch nicht zu viel verraten. Wir wissen es ehrlich gesagt auch noch nicht, aber wir kommen, also wir machen auf jeden Fall das, was kommt. Wir sind dran.
Jawohl.
Alright. Wir sind raus. Kicks out.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special report. Kicks Podcast.